seat. Her empty half-scowl was a mask. Drummer tried a smile. It worked as well as anything else. "One of the things I learned working for Fred Johnson back in the day," Drummer said, "don't let things sit for too long. It's always tempting to just ignore the things that aren't actually on fire just at the moment, but then you're also committing to spend your time putting out fires." "You're talking about the tariff structure Earth and Mars are proposing for Ganymede?" Drummer's heart sank a little. She managed to forget about that nascent issue, and being reminded felt oppressive. "No, I mean the Rosinante problem, and how it relates to..." She jerked a thumb toward the empty monitor where the seed pod video had been. "We've just taken control of the governor of a colony planet. The Association of Worlds hasn't formally asked about his status with us yet, but it's just a matter of time. I can feel Carrie Fisk rubbing her stubby little fingers together. It would make me very happy to get out in front of this." "So," Santos Baca said, "well, I have had some informal conversations about it. The idea of asking the UN for a charter is... it's a hard sell. We didn't come all this way to go back down Dirtside to ask permission for things, now, did we?" Drummer nodded. The enmity between the Inners and the Belt was still the biggest obstacle Drummer faced, and even she didn't have much use for the Earth-Mars coalition. "I understand that," Drummer said. "I don't like it either. But it gives us a level of deniability for things like James Holden's new policing schemes. What I don't want is 1,300 planets deciding that the Union is the problem. If the UN is behind a crackdown, even just nominally, it spreads out the responsibility. This Houston and his band of merry men can rot in a UN jail, and then we're still just the ships that take things from one place to another. Prisoners, among other things." "Or," Santos Baca said, "we admit what we've been playing footsie with since we crawled up out of the starving years. We start treating the Union like the government of the 1,300 worlds." "I don't want to be president of 1,300 worlds, Drummer said. "I want to run a transport union that regulates trade through the gates. And then I want all those planets and moons and satellites to work out their own issues without it gumming up our works. We're already stretched too thin." "If we had more personnel, Emily," Drummer said, "do you know the one thing I am absolutely sure won't fix any of our problems? Another committee." Santos Baca laughed, and a soft chime came from Drummer's desk, an alert from Vaughn. High priority. She let it ride for a little bit. If it wasn't people's home about to break apart, another minute wasn't going to hurt. If it was, it wouldn't help. "You've seen all the same logistical reports that I have," Drummer said. "Expecting the Union to police the whole..." The chime came again, louder this time. Drummer growled and tapped the screen to accept. Vaughn appeared, and before she could snap at the man, he spoke. "Laconia put out a message, ma'am." Drummer looked at him. "What?" "The warning message from Laconia Gate was taken down," Vaughn said. "It's been replaced by a new message. The report from Medina came in." He looked away and then back to her. 4 minutes ago." "Is it broadcast?"
"Yes, ma'am," Vaughn said. "Audio only. Not encrypted either. This is a press release."
"Let me hear it," she said. The voice, when it came, was low and warm. It reminded her of a scratchy blanket she'd had once, comforting and rough in equal measure. She didn't trust it. "Citizens of the Human Coalition, this is Admiral Trejo of the Laconia Naval Command. We are opening our gate. In 120 hours, we will pass into the slow zone in transit to Medina Station,
with a staff and support to address Laconia's role in the greater human community going forward. We hope and expect this meeting will be amicable. Message repeats. Well, Santos Baca said, and then stopped. Didn't see that coming. All right, Drummer said, and looked into Santos Baca's wide eyes. Emily, get me everyone. The Void City people's home was still in Mars orbit, down close to Earth and the Sun, and held and gone from the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. It took 10 hours to hear back from all the experts in the Union hierarchy, and 5 more for the system to review everything and build a unified report. Every question, every clarification, every new nuance or caveat would take about as long. Drummer was going to be spending most of the 120 hours before Laconia reopened, waiting to hear from people. Their messages were flying between planets and moons, void cities and stations at the speed of light and vacuum, and it was still too damn slow. The voice on the message matched Anton Trejo, a lieutenant in the MCRN who had gone to Laconia with the breakaway fleet after the bombardment of Earth. Yes, it was possible that the voice was faked, but the technical service tended to accept it as genuine. Medina Station reported light and radiation spikes coming through Laconia Gate, consistent with ships approaching on a breaking burn. How many ships, and of what kind, there wasn't enough information to guess at. Mars had lost almost a third of its ships when the Free Navy made its brief, doomed grab at power. Those had been divided between the Free Navy's forces in Sol's system and the breakaway fleet going to Laconia. In the decades since, Earth and Mars had slowly rebuilt their navies. Technological breakthroughs based on reverse engineering alien artifacts, lace plating, feedback bottles, inertial compensating PDC cannons were standard now. Even if the ships on the other side of the Laconia Gate had been able to glean some details of how the manufacturing processes worked, they would have to build shipyards and manufacturing bases before they could start using them. 30 years without a refit was a long time. The most likely scenario was that something in Duarte's private banana republic had finally gone wrong enough that he was being forced back into contact to threaten or beg or barter whatever he or whoever was in power by this time needed to prop things up. The flag in the intelligence report, speculating about the fate of the active protomolecule sample that the Free Navy had stolen from Tycho during the war, tripped Drummer up a little when she read it. She remembered that day, fighting in her own corridors, her own station. Even now she remembered the cold rage that came from discovering betrayal in her ranks, and Fred Johnson's leadership in the face of it. She still missed Fred, and sitting in her crash couch with the intelligence reports waiting patiently on her monitor, she wondered what he would have made of all this. Not just Duarte and Laconia, but all of it. Her monitor chimed, and the orange temporary priority flag appeared. A new report from Medina with the updated analysis of the drive signatures from the far side of Laconia Gate. She blew out a breath and opened it. The certainty factors were still thin, but the drives were either unregistered or altered so much they no longer matched the database. She ran her finger over the accompanying text to keep her tired eyes from sliding off them. There had been at least one Doniger-class battleship in Duarte's stolen fleet. Given the size of the incoming plume, it was possible this was that ship. Older, yes, worn down, but still a powerhouse. She stood, stretched. Her back ached from between her shoulder blades up to the base of her skull. She'd been spending too much time reading reports that she should have given to Vaughn. Digesting information down to the critical pieces was part of his job, after all. Used to be, It had been hers, too. She trusted herself more than she did him. She located Emily Santos Baca on the ship. It was late, but the younger woman hadn't left for her quarters either. The system put her in the administrative commissary. The idea of food woke her stomach, and a hunger she hadn't noticed rose up like a flame. Drummer sent a quick message asking her to wait there for a few minutes. She shut down her monitor, put it in security lock, and made her way out. The hallways of people's home still had a sense of newness about them. The foot and handholds on the walls didn't have the wear of a lived-in ship or station. The lights all had a brightness, subtle but unmistakable, that spoke of recent installation. Not enough time for anything to age or break. Their great floating city would develop all of that in time, but for now it and the others like it were the bright, perfect Singapores of their age. The well-regulated city. Now, if she could just push that out as far as the stars, everything would be just ducky. She found Santos Baca sitting with an older man in a gray jumpsuit. He nodded to Drummer as she approached. When she sat down, he left. Santos Baca smiled. "You look like you could use some food. It's been a while since lunch. I'll get to that in a minute. You saw the reports? I'm not quite caught up, but yes. Where's the board on this?" The younger woman settled into herself, thoughtful and closed as a poker player. When she spoke, her voice was careful. "It's hard to get too worried about a fleet of out-of-date Martian warships commanded by the remnants of a decades-old coup. Frankly, I'm a little surprised to find out there's anyone alive there."
"Agreed.
The message isn't coming up with any particular flag of high stress in the vocal patterns. Or any demands. At least, not as yet."
"I know, Emily, I read the reports. I'm asking what you think of them."
Santos Baca opened her hands, an old-school gesture that said, "It's right there in front of you."
"I think we're about to see a bunch of self-centered assholes who've realized that their glorious independence isn't going to work out in isolation. If we can keep them from losing face, we can probably find a negotiated path to reintegration. But Mars is going to be a problem. They're going to want all of them trotted back to Olympus Mons and hung as traitors."
"That's what I was thinking, too. Any idea how to approach them about this?"
"I've been trading some messages with Admiral Hu. She's Earth, but she has friends in Martian high command," Santos Baca said. "Nothing formal. And McCahill in security."
"Of course.
The other possibility is that they're going to try force.
With ships that haven't resupplied or seen a shipyard in decades," Drummer said. "And with our railgun emplacements all warmed up and ready to poke holes in anyone that gets too rowdy. Are we thinking that's a realistic possibility?"
"It's not the odds-on bet. Even when their fleet was new, taking out the railgun emplacements would have been a mighty tall order."
Drummer considered. "We can get a couple ships as backup, just in case. If it turns out Laconia needs its ass kicked, I'm not sending our ships through their gate. But it may make that charter an easier sell. Let Mars smell blood and vengeance and see if the EMC gets more interested in enforcement and policing than it was before."
"It would be a very different case," Santos Baca agreed. It was good that they were on the same page with this.
Drummer had half feared that the board was going to come up with their own strategy. Her job was herding kittens. Only thankfully, not this time. She was trying to avoid being a police force. She sure as hell didn't want to command a full military. If there was going to be a war on the far side of Laconia Gate, let Mars fight it.
"All right then," Drummer said. "Nothing we can't handle."
Chapter 11. Bobby. When the Rossi pulled into port at Medina, the security detail was there to take Houston into custody. Bobby watched Holden as the prisoner marched away. She thought there'd been a melancholy look in Holden's eyes. The last thing he'd done as captain was hand over a man to live in a cell. Or she might have been reading more into the situation than was there. Drummer's threatened press release didn't appear. After that, they'd all gone out to a club. Naomi rented a private room for all of them, and they'd eaten a dinner of vat-grown beef and fresh vegetables seasoned with mineral-rich salt and hot pepper. Bobby tried not to get drunk or maudlin, but she was the only one, except Amos. He'd watched all the hugging and weeping and protestations of love like a mom at a 5-year-old's birthday party, indulgent and supportive, but not really engaged with it. After they'd eaten, they went out to the floor of the club and danced and sang karaoke and drank a little more, and then Holden and Naomi left together, their arms around each other's hips, strolling out into Medina Station's corridors as if they were going to come back. Only they weren't. The four of them made their way back to the port talking and laughing. Alex was reciting lines and acting out scenes from one of the neo-noir films he collected. She and Clarissa egged him on. Amos grinned and ambled along behind them, but she saw him watching the halls, in case four old, half-drunk space jockeys attracted any trouble. Not that there was a reason to expect it. It was just something he did. She noticed it, in part because she did it, too. Back at the ship, the others scattered, floating to their rooms. Bobby waited in the galley, sipping a bulb of fresh coffee until they were gone. There was still one more thing she wanted to do before she called it a day, and it was something she wanted to do alone. Around her, the Rosinante ticked as the residual heat of their journey slowly radiated out into the absolute vacuum of the slow zone. The air recyclers hummed. A sense of peace descended over everything, like she was a child again, and this was the night after Christmas. She let her breath deepen and slow, feeling the ship around her like it was her skin. When she finished the last drop of coffee, she put the empty bulb into the recycler and drew herself down the corridor to Holden's cabin, the captain's cabin, hers. Holden and Naomi had taken everything out already. The drawers were unlocked. The captain's safe was open and scrubbed, waiting for a new access code. The double-sized crash couch, the one Holden and Naomi had shared for so long, gleamed clean and polished. The slightly acrid smell of fresh gel told her that Naomi had replaced it all before she went. Clean sheets for the new tenant. Bobby let herself drift into the space, stretching out her arms and legs. Eyes closed, she listened to the peculiar quietness of this cabin. How it was like the one she'd been using these last years. How it was different. When she reached out to take a handhold, the wall was still a half a meter away. A double-sized crew cabin, created so Naomi and Holden could share the space, had become the privilege of being the Rosinante's captain. She smiled at the thought. The safe waited for her passcode. She fed it the prints from her thumb and two index fingers, then typed in the password she'd chosen and spoke it out loud for the system to learn. 16 digits long, committed to her memory, and not associated with anything outside itself. The safe closed with a solid clack. Magnetic locks falling into place, or it would take a welding torch and a lot of time to force. She pulled up her partition on the wall screen, checking to see that everything was in place. The drive was quiet. The reactors shut down. The environmental systems well within the green. Everything just the way it should be on her ship.
It was going to take a while, she figured, before the thought didn't seem like she was play-acting. Better that she got used to it, though. Her ship. 4 messages waited for her in the queue. The first 2 were automated messages, one confirming the docking agreement and fee structure for their present stay in Medina. The other showing the withdrawal from the group account of Holden and Naomi's lump cash-out. The Rosinante already sending her the things it used to route to Holden. The 3rd was from Medina Traffic Control, but the 4th was from the man himself, James Holden. She opened that one first. His face appeared on the screen, floating in the same room she was in now, back when it had been his. He was smiling, and she felt herself smiling back. "Hey, Bobby," he said, and his voice seemed loud in the quiet. "I just wanted to leave this here for you as a note. I've spent a lot of time on the Rossi. My best moments are part of this boat, and a bunch of the worst ones, and most of the people I love. I can't think of anyone else in 1,300 worlds I'd trust with it the way I trust you. Thank you for taking this cup from me. And if there's ever anything I can do to help out down the line, just say so. I may not be part of the crew anymore, but we're still family." The message ended, and she flagged it to be saved. She opened the one from Traffic Control. A young man with deeply black skin and close-cropped hair nodded into his camera at her. "Captain Holden, I am Michael Simeon with Medina Station Security. I am sending this to inform you that in accordance with Union policy, the Rosinante is being called to a mandatory security contract. Your presence is required at a briefing on the incoming ambassadorial contact from Laconia at the location and time embedded in this message. Please confirm that you or your representative will be attending." Bobby tapped the reply, considered herself in the screen for a moment before she pulled her hair back into a bun and scowled her reply. "This is Captain Draper of the Rosinante," she said. "I'll be there." 10 minutes into the briefing, Bobby thought, oh, this is why he didn't want the job anymore. The room was in the drum section of the station, up near the non-rotating command decks. The desks were lined up in rows like the worst kind of classroom, with hard seats and built-in drink holders that didn't quite fit the cheap ceramic mugs they'd given out. There were around 40 people in the uncomfortable seats with her, representatives of all the ships presently in the slow zone, but she and the executive officer of the Tory Byron had places of honor. Front row, center, where the smart kids sat. The Rosinante and the Tory Byron were, after all, the only gunships around Medina at the moment. All the rest were tugs and cargo haulers. The man at the front of the room wasn't the one who'd summoned her, but his boss. Anne Lungstever was the head of the security forces, and so, for the length of her mandatory temporary contract, technically her boss. He wore a Medina station uniform like it was a mech driver's undersuit. Dandruff dotted his shoulders. "The biggest thing is, we don't want to seem aggressive," Longstever said. "But we don't want to look passive either." In her peripheral vision, the others nodded. Bobby tried to crack her knuckles, but she'd already done it twice since she sat down and her joints were silent. Longstever went on. "We've got the railgun emplacements on the hub station, same like always, Sasa, so that anyone tries anything, we spark those up and..." The director of station security for the transport union cocked his fingers into little gun shapes and made pew-pew noises. "Probab, they come through like any ambassador. Doc, talk, and los politicos do their dance. But if they come through with ideas, we're ready. Not starting, but not a clean shot too, yeah?"
A general murmur of assent.
You have to protect the guns, Bobby said. The rail gun emplacements on the hub station. If they get a force onto the surface...
Savvy, savvy, Longstever said, patting the air. This is the Tory Byron, yeah?
What we need is intelligence about what's coming through that gate before it comes through, Bobby said, knowing as the words passed her lips that she wasn't going to be thanked for them.
Still, now that she'd started, a dozen probes going through the gate now could relay back whether we're looking at a Doniger-class battleship or a few gunships or just a shuttle.
How we get ready for any of those should be different.
Yeah, thought of that, Longstever said. Don't want to be provocative, though, yeah?
And anyway, we're not going to act much different no matter what.
Working with what we're working with.
So, send a ship through with a fruit basket, Bobby said. Greet them on their territory and get a report back.
Longstever stopped and stared at her. She stared back. The room was quiet for a long breath. Then another. He looked away first.
Can't send a manned ship through. Union rules. It's in the work agreement, yeah? So we put Tory Byron up like an honor guard. The Rocinante in Medina's shadow make sure no one lands that isn't welcome. Everyone else in dock or cleared out enough to put a clear path between Laconia Gate and Medina. Everyone that gets delayed, the union picks up the fees. Tory Byron gets full security contract schedule. Rocinante gets 3/4 for support role. Standard.
Bobby wondered what Holden would have done in this moment. Made an impassioned speech about how the Union rules were restricting them past the point of tactical competence. Smiled his, I don't actually like you very much smile, then gone back to the ship and done whatever the hell he wanted to do anyway. Or sucked it up as a battle that wasn't worth fighting. Only it was her battle now. And while she was very clear that she was in the right, it was also evident that her position wasn't going to help her change Longstever's plan. She couldn't beat sense into a stone, not even when it seemed fun to try.
Understood, Bobby said. All the way back to the dock, her jaw was clenched. It was just people. They were the same everywhere. She'd dealt with bureaucracy when she was in the service, and when she'd done her veterans outreach work. She'd run up against it when Fred Johnson had the idiotic plan to make her kind of an ersatz Martian ambassador during the constitutional crisis. And when she'd taken her place on the Rocinante, she'd been happy to let Holden, or sometimes Naomi, take point on the bullshit diplomatic dance-and-kiss charade. It wasn't even that she was worried about the outcome of this particular encounter. It was that there was a better approach. She'd told them what it was, and they weren't going to do it. And her ship, her people, were going to shoulder some part of the unnecessary risk. There was no scenario ever that was going to make that okay with her. As a generation ship, the Nauvoo hadn't expected to berth a lot of ships. As a battleship, the behemoth's needs had been minimal. What hadn't been there, time and necessity had added. The major docks on Medina Station were outside the drum, down near the engineering decks and the long quiescent drive that had been designed to launch the ship on a centuries-long voyage to the stars. A smaller dock had been built on the far end of the drum, near the command decks, but it was used more for private shuttles and diplomatic meetings. The Rocinante was berthed in the main docks, not far from the Tory Byron, and Bobby cycled into the airlock with her sense of rage starting to fade. A little. She could hate it and still do the job. That was all she could do, really. Welcome back, Alex said over the ship comms as the inner doors of the airlock cycled closed. There a plan?
Plan is to hang back and see if the new Laconian ambassador needs to show everyone how big his dick is, Bobby said. The Tory Byron and the railgun emplacements are taking point. We'll hang back and splash any boarding teams that get close.
She pulled herself past the lockers, out to the lift, and up toward ops. Alex's voice shifted from the comms to his actual voice as she got close.
Well, good that we won't be the first ones getting shot at. I mean, assuming anyone gets shot at all. Got to admit, I'm a little bit hoping they try something.
You mean because Duarte and his people are a bunch of traitors to the Republic who all deserve to hang for treason?
And theft. Don't forget theft. And not warning anyone when the Free Navy is looking to kill a few billion people. I mean, I'm all for forgiveness and bygones be bygones, but it's easier to stomach that after the assholes are all dead.
Bobby strapped herself into a crash couch. This may not even be Duarte's people. For all we know, he got stabbed in his bathtub 15 years ago.
A man can hope, Alex agreed.
The dimness of the ops deck meant most of the light on his face was splashing up from the monitor.
I shifted the Rossi back to a 4-person crew configuration.
It's not enough, Bobby said. We need more crew.
We did it this way for years before you and Claire joined up. It works better than you expect. Hey, look, since there's a chance that someone might be trying to poke holes through Medina Station, would you mind if I kept Holden and Naomi on the ship's channel, just in case?
Bobby hesitated. Part of her bridled at the prospect of having personnel who weren't on the operation still be in the communications chain. But it was Holden and Naomi, and cutting them out also felt strange. Alex was waiting for an answer. She made a gesture as if she'd been thinking of something else.
Of course not, Bobby said. They're family.
Alex's faint smile meant he'd known she'd say it, and was glad she'd said it that way. She opened a connection to Amos and Clarissa.
Okay, everyone, pre-flight checks. Let's get ourselves into position.
The slow zone, Gates, Medina Station, and the alien hub station with the railguns was only tiny if compared to the vastness of normal space. The whole volume was smaller than the sun, and with the guesses she'd seen about how much energy it took to hold the gates open and stable, probably equally energetic, but controlled by forces they were still struggling to make sense of. And between the gates, a darkness that matter and energy slipped into, but from which nothing ever came back. The not-emptiness past the gates left her feeling a little claustrophobic, with only a sphere a million clicks across to move in. Even that constrained, Medina Station would have been too small to see on her monitor, if it had all been rendered to scale. Instead, she had a window with the full system, gates, stations, the Rossi, the Tory Byron, the railgun emplacements, on one side of her monitor, and 3 smaller displays showing tactical displays of the Rossi and the needle-thin radar shadow of Medina, the Tory Byron, and Laconia Gate, respectively. A countdown timer marked the minutes and seconds until this Admiral Trejo said he'd be coming through. Her shoulders were tight. She felt like they were in the moment between throwing dice and seeing what numbers had come up. The gambler's high. She didn't like how much she liked it. Medina's sensors are getting something, Clarissa said from the engineering deck.
Throw me the update, please, Bobby said,
and the screen with Laconia Gate on her monitor shifted to a live feed of the gate itself, enhanced in false color to make the darkness legible. The weird circle of the gate, the wavering stars beyond it, and a looming shadow coming through. Even just watching the stars go out behind it, Bobby could tell it was a big ship. Maybe it was their Doniger-class battleship. And that in itself would be the Laconians making a statement. Unless it was something else. The ship that came through first looked wrong. It was something more than the weirdly organic shape of it. The way the false color struggled to make sense of its surface was like a graphical glitch or something out of a dream. She found herself looking for seams where its plating came together, and there was nothing. Her mind kept trying to see it as a ship, but defaulting to some kind of ancient sea creature from the deep trenches of Earth.
"That ain't one of ours," Alex said. "Shit, where did they get that?"
"I don't like this," Clarissa said.
"Me neither, little sister," Bobby thought.
On the traffic control channel, the captain of the Tory Byron was hailing the Laconian, whatever it was, ordering it to come to a full stop. Bobby nodded at the screen, willing Trejo to respond, to make this a more normal interaction. Instead, the strange ship continued on its course, placid and implacable. Another drive plume still showed on the other side of the gate. Much smaller, but a second ship all the same. After a moment, the Tory Byron lit its main drive, moving itself in on an intercept. It was like watching a house cat preparing to face down a lion. "This is your final warning," the Tory Byron announced. Bobby's monitor updated. The Tory Byron had hit the big ship with a target lock, and then it was gone. Where the Tory had been, only a sparkling cloud of matter so strange the Rossi's sensors didn't know what to make of it.
"What the fuck?" Alex breathed. "Did they shoot something? I didn't see them shoot anything."
Bobby's stomach felt so heavy, it seemed like it ought to be dragging her down, even on the float. She opened a channel to the railgun emplacements before she was consciously aware she'd done it, the certainty growing in her, even as she got the lock, that it wouldn't be enough, that nothing would be. But there was a way you did these things, an order to battle, even when the battle was doomed.
"Fire, fire, fire," she shouted.
On her screen, the rail gun spat. Chapter 12. Holden. The Transport Union controller's offices were buried three levels deep in the thick walls of Medina Station's rotating drum. It made the Coriolis slightly less noticeable than inside the drum, but also meant that they were inside gray metal cubes with desks in them and no screens to even give the illusion of a window. Holden couldn't say for sure why it felt more depressing than sitting in the metal cubes of a spaceship compartment, but it was. Naomi sat beside him, watching the news feeds on her hand terminal, unaffected by the grim locale. The Rosinante was doing a mandatory security contract, the first gig since they'd left. Maybe that was what he was reacting to.
"Form 4011D transfers your retainer and future contracts to Roberta W. Draper and states that she is now the legal captain of the Rosinante and president of RossiCorp, a series-registered corporate entity." The transport union representative, who was processing their paperwork, handed Holden an oversized terminal covered in legalese. She had a pinched face, deep frown lines on her forehead and around her mouth, and wore her hair in short spikes dyed flaming red. Holden thought she looked like a disgruntled pufferfish, but recognized his unflattering opinion was at least partly a reaction to the mountain of forms she'd made him fill out.
"You do know," the pufferfish said, "that this is a temporary change of status pending the legal change of ownership registration?
Our next stop is the bank, where we'll be finalizing the loan to sell the ship."
"Mm-hmm," Puffer said, making it a sound of deep skepticism. As Holden filled out the next of the endless forms, he listened to the small voices coming from Naomi's terminal. He only caught about every third word, but the hot topic of conversation was definitely the approaching Laconian ships.
"Luna," Naomi said.
"Something happening on Luna?"
"No, I mean, let's try Luna first. It'll be easy to find consulting gigs, what with all the work going on down on Earth." I'm not sure I... Holden started. Not you. Me. I could get consulting gigs. I like the gravity there. And you could pop down the well whenever you wanted to visit your parents. True. His parents were all pushing the centenarian mark, and while he'd been lucky and they were all in pretty good shape, he didn't want them doing orbital launches to visit him if they could avoid it. And it's all very far from this, she said, pointing at her screen. Not a bad thing, he agreed, and handed his filled-out screen back to the puffer. But I did like the idea of living in exuberant decadence on Titan. When we have enough money to do that for another 3 decades. 2 hours, Naomi said, and Holden didn't need to ask what she was referring to. 2 hours until the first representatives from Laconia to come through their gate in decades would arrive. We done here? The puffer agreed that they were. I could use a drink, Holden said. Let's go get a drink and watch the big arrival on the screens in a bar or something. They did. It didn't go well. Holden ran across the open fields of the rotating drum, leading toward the lift up to Medina's command center. The adrenaline pumping through his veins only seemed to make his heart beat faster without speeding him up. It occurred to him, with a sort of surreal detachment, that this was exactly like the many nightmares he'd had. He reached the lift station, pressed the call button, and willed the doors to open. Bobby was yelling, "Fire! Fire! Fire!" on the Rosie's group channel, her voice coming out of his terminal loud but not panicky. Commanding. On the screen, Alex was sending him the Rosie's tactical display. 3 of the railguns on the hub station fired at the massive Laconian ship. The shots all hit, tearing holes in the hull, but the breaches closed almost as fast as they were created. It didn't look like damage control systems. It looked like it was healing. Holden had seen that sort of nearly instantaneous repair before, but not on human technologies. It took a really bad situation and made it a nightmare. Bobby, he yelled back at the terminal, keep the ship. He didn't get to finish, because the screen flashed white and died. Medina actually shuddered. The entire station shook and rang like a bell. Jim, Naomi said, and then couldn't finish because she was still gasping for breath from her run. She made the belt her hand signal for emergency. Should we be looking for a shelter? It was a valid question. If the Laconians started poking holes in Medina, they'd want to be in a sealed emergency compartment with its own air supply. Go find one, he said, but I need to get up to command. Why? Another valid question. Because I've fought in 3 major wars, he thought. Because the Belters running the station are the ones that didn't join Marco's Free Navy, so they've never been in this kind of fight. They'll need my experience. All perfectly true and probably valid reasons. But he didn't say them out loud because he knew Naomi would see through them instantly to the truth. Because something terrible is happening, and I don't know how not to be in the middle of it. The doors finally opened, and the car recognized him as a captain with union clearances and gave him access to the overrides. As they went up, the feeling of gravity slowly turned into a lurching sideways motion and then disappeared. The lift opened into the corridors that Holden remembered fighting through under heavy fire, back when humans first found their way into the ring system. That astonishing moment in human history, passing through a stable wormhole into an alien-created network of interstellar gates, had just led to a whole bunch of people deciding to shoot each other. And now, a group of people who'd been isolated from humanity for decades were rejoining society just as things seemed to be going pretty well. And what did they do? Start shooting. Holden's terminal gave a gentle ping and then reconnected to the network. A moment later, Alex's face appeared.
You still there, Cap?
Yeah, just outside Medina Ops. Did that thing hit the station? Not seeing any Atmo loss alerts here.
It shot the... Alex started, then said, It's easier to show you. Take a look at this shit.
Just a minute. Holden slapped the wall panel and the door slid open. He pulled himself inside the op center. The duty officer put up a hand.
You can't come in here, sir. I mean, Captain Holden, sir.
Who's in charge right now?
Me?
Holden had met her once before at a transport union function. Daphne Cole, a competent technician, somebody who'd done an engineering tour on Tycho. Perfect for non-combat ops duty on a station like Medina. Absolutely out of her depth now.
Holden?
Alex said.
Are you still there?
Holden turned his hand terminals so the duty officer could see it too.
Go ahead, Alex.
On his hand terminal screen, the massive Laconian ship was floating past the ring gate. It had a thick lozenge shape, not quite circular in cross-section, and with a variety of asymmetrical projections jutting out from the sides. More organic than constructed. It came to a gentle stop just inside the ring gate. The Torrey Byron, the Transport Union's cruiser tasked with defending Medina Station, moved toward it. Holden couldn't see or hear them, but he imagined the stream of hails and demands the Byron was throwing at the Laconian ship. Then, happening so fast it was like a glitch in the graphic, the Byron turned into a rapidly expanding cloud of superheated gas and metal fragments. In the playback, Bobby was yelling, "Fire! Fire! Fire!" and the railguns on the hub station opened up. The image jittered, and the railguns were ripped away from the hub and sent spinning off, fracturing into a cloud of ceramic shrapnel as they went.
"That's what you felt," Alex said. "The second time they fired that weapon, every ship in the zone shook, and half the electronics blew out."
"What?" Holden said. "The fuck was that?" Alex didn't answer. His expression was as eloquent as a shrug.
"Okay, I assume Bobby's got you guys hiding in the station's radar shadow still, since I'm talking to you and you're not dead."
"Yeah,"
Alex said.
"She seems pretty strongly in favor of not doing anything to make it mad."
"Let me see what I can find out here and I'll call back."
"Copy that,"
Alex said.
"Rosie out."
"It's magnetic?" Naomi said, her tone managing to be authoritative and astounded at the same time. "This is what it is, but I don't believe what I'm seeing." She'd floated across the op center to one of the consoles and was working with the tech there. "It's reading as an incredibly strong magnetic field focused down to a narrow beam." "Is that possible?" the duty officer said, her voice small and tight.
"Only if you define possible as things that have already happened," Naomi said, not turning to look at her.
"So, anything made of metal is vulnerable," another tech said.
"It isn't just metal," Holden replied, then pushed off to drift over to Naomi's station and look at the data she was pulling up.
"Everything has a magnetic field," Naomi added.
"Usually it's too weak to matter, but at the levels that beam is hitting, it could spaghettify hydrogen atoms. Anything it touches will be ripped apart."
"There's no way to defend against something like that," Holden said, then went limp. In microgravity, it was not as satisfying as collapsing into a chair would have been.
"That's what shook Medina," Naomi said. "Just the beam passing near us. The maneuvering thrusters had to fire to hold us still."
"Holden, this is Draper," his terminal said.
"Holden here.
Looks like that big bastard is ignoring us as long as we stay really still and keep the weapons unpowered."
"That's a good sign," Holden said.
It might mean they're not looking to kill everyone, just making a point of destroying anything that's a threat.
Point loudly and clearly made, Bobby agreed. But be aware, there's a second ship, smaller, and it's heading for Medina.
Tactical assessment?
Based on how thoroughly they took out our defenses, Bobby said, I'd bet they do a hard breach, storm ops in the reactor room, and grab full control of the station. If their ground troops have tech like that ship does, it shouldn't take long.
Copy that. I'm going to try to minimize casualties down here. Wait for me to make contact. Holden out.
Hard breach? Naomi asked, though her tone said she already knew the answer.
They'll drop fire teams all over the station to take over access points, control centers, power and environmental support, Holden replied, more to the room at large than to Naomi.
He turned to Daphne Cole.
I think you should have everyone here start making calls. Get every union and planetary rep in secure locations, but tell their security details to stand down. No visible weapons. Tell them we're not attempting to repel borders. That'll just get people killed and maybe piss off that monster of a ship.
Yes, sir, she said. Are you taking command?
No, I'm not, but this is the right thing to do, and we need to do it now, so we should do it. Please.
Her expression fell a degree.
She'd hoped someone in authority had arrived. Someone who knew what to do. He recognized the hope and the disappointment both.
We're not going to fight back at all? Cole asked.
He gestured toward the screens. The dust that was Tory Byron and the railgun emplacements.
Cole looked away.
Still, he couldn't bring himself to say no.
Not yet, Holden said.
Naomi was already collecting sidearms from the other techs in the ops center and putting them in a duffel bag.
Not yet.
The second ship looked to be about destroyer-sized to Holden's eye. It did a slow flyover of Medina Station, taking out the torpedo racks and PDC emplacements with pinpoint-accurate railgun shots, then dropping a dozen marine landing craft. As it came, Cole did as he suggested, passing the word throughout the ship not to resist. Live to fight another day. After the last call, she seemed to sway for a moment, then turned, spat on the deck, and pulled up something that looked like a security interface.
What are you doing?
Purging the security system, she said. No census, no biometric records, no deck plans, no records. We can't stop the fuckers, but we don't need to make it easy for them.
Fou bien, Naomi said, approving.
Holden wondered whether the forces coming in would be able to track the decision back to her. He hoped they wouldn't. Each landing craft held a fire team of 8 Marines, all wearing power armor of an unusual design, like Bobby's, but with different articulation at the joints, and all in a vibrant blue that made them seem like something that had hauled itself up from the sea. The Marines were methodical and professional. Where the doors opened for them, they entered without causing damage. Where they found locked doors, they breached with ruthless efficiency, blowing the door seals and hauling the plates back in a single, well-trained motion. When they passed unarmed civilians, they moved on by with nothing more than a warning not to resist. The few times they ran into someone with a hero complex who tried to fight back, they killed whoever presented a threat, but no one else. That it wasn't a straight-out massacre was the only comfort. Watching it all happen from his position in the ops center, Holden found that he had to admire the level of training and discipline the Laconians displayed. They left no doubt that they were absolutely in charge, and they responded to any aggression with immediate lethal force. But they didn't abuse the civilians. They didn't push anyone around. They showed nothing that looked like bravado or bullying. Even the violence didn't have any anger behind it. They were like animal handlers.
Holden, Naomi, and the rest of the Ops Center techs did what they could to keep the station populace from panicking or foolishly resisting, but it was almost irrelevant. Nothing kept the people calmer than the calm their invaders demonstrated. When the door to the Ops Center opened and one of the fire teams entered, Holden told everyone in the room to raise their hands and surrender. A tall, dark-skinned woman in armor with insignia that looked like a modified Martian colonel rank walked toward him on magnetic boots. "I am Colonel Tanaka," she said, her voice booming with electronically augmented volume. "Medina Station is under our control. Please indicate that you understand and are complying." Holden nodded and gave her his best fake smile.
"I understand. And as long as you continue not to abuse the people here, we will not violently resist."
It was a deliberate provocation. If Tanaka were there to flex her muscles and show how important and in charge she was, she'd point out that her people could abuse the populace to their heart's content, and there wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. Instead, she said,
"Understood. Prepare a hard dock at the reactor level of the station for our ship."
When the dockmaster indicated that it was ready, Tanaka touched a control on her wrist and said, "Captain Singh, a berth is being prepped for docking. The station is ours." "I am Captain Santiago Singh of the Laconian destroyer Gathering Storm," the young man said. "I'm here to accept your surrender." His uniform was trim and spotless. The design looked Martian, except for the blue-gray color scheme where Holden was used to red and black. Cole floated before him, confusion in her eyes. "This is an act of war," she said, her voice trembling. Holden felt an urge to step in, refocus the man onto him, just to make her safer. It was a stupid impulse. "The Union, the Earth-Mars Coalition, the Association of Worlds, they won't stand for this."
"I know," the young man said. "This is going to be all right. But I have to accept your surrender now, please."
She braced to attention, and it was over. It had taken less than 4 hours from the first transit. Marines in Laconian power armor patrolled the corridors and command points of the station. Naval personnel in sharply designed uniforms hurried about hooking equipment into various communication and environmental systems with a well-practiced efficiency. The people of Medina mostly watched in a sort of dazed shock. It had all happened so quickly, it was impossible to process. He and Naomi were swept up along with the hundreds of representatives from the colonized worlds, several dozen reps from the transport union, the senior staff of Medina Station. He didn't have any actual authority. He wasn't even technically the captain of a ship or a member of the transport union anymore, but no one argued. They all gathered in the coalition council room, an amphitheater with 2,000 seats and a stage with a podium on it that consciously aped the layout of the General Assembly of the UN back on Earth. Admiral Trejo was a stocky, older man, with the relaxed air of a person who'd spent so long holding a military posture that he looks comfortable in it. He took his place at the podium, flanked by a pair of Marines. Captain Singh and Colonel Tanaka stood respectfully behind him and off to one side.
"Greetings," the Admiral said, smiling out at them. "I am High Admiral Anton Trejo of the Laconian Empire, and personal representative of High Consul Winston Duarte, our leader. And now, your leader as well."
He paused as though waiting for applause. After a moment, he continued.
"As you know, we have accepted control of Medina Station. And yes, we intend to take control of all the 1,300 worlds it leads to. This isn't an act of aggression, but necessity. We bear no ill will or animosity toward any of you. As you've seen, this will be as bloodless a transition as you allow it to be.
I'm bringing you here to implore you to please, please contact your homeworlds. We will make communications available for anyone who will tell them peacefully to relinquish control to us.